Hi, I'm Dr. Jillian Murphy, a naturopath, healthy-ish lifestyle architect, body joy seeker, and French fry activist. And you're listening to 100% Healthy-ish. Here's the thing. As a naturopath and an intuitive eating, health at every size health coach, I have seen every angle and end of the health conversation. And after years of clinical and coaching experience, I've developed a framework for feeling good and having fun that I know you're gonna love. To be healthy-ish, we move beyond the boring basics and consider some ish you have never thought of before when it comes to your health. Are you ready? It's gonna be fun. Let's go. Today, I wanna talk about the difference between orthorexia and just a good, healthy interest in food that nourishes. What is the difference? How can we tell them apart? Does it matter if we tell them apart? Let's talk about it. So first of all, I just want to define orthorexia because there are still people who are unclear as to what this is. And it's defined as an obsession with healthy eating, and is associated with highly restrictive behaviors, characterized by the fact that even though there's an attempt to attain optimum nutrition and optimum health through attention to diet, it often leads to malnourishment and loss of relationships and poor quality of life. So obviously, there is a need to distinguish between just someone who's interested in nutrition and food and being well and someone who is in an orthorexic state, because one is functional and one is not very functional. One starts to collapse our lives. It starts to make our lives smaller and smaller and smaller, and can also lead to terrible physical health outcomes. And it leads me to this saying when I was in the height of my orthorexic tendencies that a running coach said to me one day. I had been searching for help. At the time, there was no understanding of orthorexia because the clean eating movement just hadn't happened yet. And I had gone to the doctor and to therapists, and I just didn't fit any of the boxes because the boxes hadn't been created yet. You know, it was just like, you're just healthy. You're just really interested in being healthy. This isn't a bad thing. It's okay. You know, even the eating disorder specialist, I didn't qualify. There was specific funding and you had to meet specific requirements. And I didn't meet the requirements of any of the standard eating disorders, but I could tell she saw something there, you know, but she just couldn't define it. She didn't have the language for it at the time. But my running coach was the only person who seemed to have the language for it. And he said something that really changed my life, which is that there is nothing healthy about being obsessed with health. And up until that point, no one had been able to articulate what was going on for me. And that was obsession, right? And it's just true that when it comes to anything, whether it's exercise or eating high quality food or just anything, when we get into these real excesses and obsessions and behaviors that are driven by fear and anxiety, we move out of the zone where there's the potential for these things to be healthy and into the zone where they start affecting our social lives and our work lives and our physical well-being and our mental well-being. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how we can separate them out, because the problem is that, as with everything, orthorexia is a spectrum. And for many people, it starts as just an interest in nutrition, an interest in food and how it affects our bodies. And that can be a good thing. That's a good thing. And the same with an interest in where our food comes from and what food production does to the environment. And, you know, there's all of these value systems around food that we can become interested in. And again, there's nothing inherently wrong with those things. But things that start out as just a mere interest in those can, for some people, morph into something much bigger and much more harmful. So how do we tell them apart? When I was in my residency of naturopathic medicine, so 2006, I had shifts at the naturopathic clinic, you know, four shifts, five shifts a week. And I was working with this young woman, and I believe she was finishing up a nutrition program. I cannot remember if it was holistic nutrition. I believe it was, or if it was a dietetics program, but I believe it was holistic nutrition. And she came in, and week after week, I'd work with her, and we were working on her health and her weight, because that was still part of the work that I did at the time. And there was just a vibe that I got from the interactions that we had. Like, there was something that was so urgent almost in the way that she spoke about food and how detail-oriented she was and specific that, you know, I was sort of 5 years into recovery at this point. Like, it just struck a chord for me. But the interesting thing is that I hadn't been recovering from quote-unquote orthorexia, right? I'd just been trying to eat more and exercise a little bit less. Like, I'd been working through it on my own. So I hadn't developed language around orthorexia. I didn't have a way to define it or to assess it. I was just aware in my body and in my bones. I had a radar for it, you could say. And there were definitely people that I encountered throughout my naturopathic schooling and early days of my practice who I felt had a really healthy approach to food and movement. But this just set off that radar. And there were many, many people that set off the radar for sure in this field, you know, but she didn't, she did, others didn't. And so I brought it up. There was just a day where I brought up, you know, I feel like there's an intensity with which you're approaching food that I'm not sure it's helpful. Like, I'm worried that we're going into this territory of obsessive, looping, circular thinking where there's no right. You know, we can never be good enough. We can never get it right enough. And she was a strong young woman. And I believe she runs a very successful sort of online nutrition community at the moment. But she sort of said, well, how do you know the difference? I need you to tell me what the difference is. And at the time, like I said, I didn't have any language for it. I hadn't explored it enough. It was just something that came out of me in our work together. So I think I fumbled my way through it. I believe I said something to the effect of, is it about anxiety or is it actually about feeling better in your body? But there was lots of challenges and objections, and it was just really difficult to form my thoughts around it. And I just sort of left it at, like, I'm just going to plant the seed here. And I want you thinking about where this intense interest in food is coming from and what it's actually bringing to your life and to your overall well-being. And I just left it at that. And we had a good relationship. We worked on other things. And so looking back now, I think the first thing that occurs to me as I'm talking about this is that that even though I've developed some language and lots of experience around it, one of the things that is so tricky is that it is a spectrum. And what I use to kind of assess when the spectrum, because it's a little different for every person, when you start to climb the spectrum toward pathological, you know, how do I assess when someone's crossed a threshold or a line where things have gone from just a healthy interest that's adding to someone's life into an obsessive compulsive behavior that's actually distracting them from life? Like, where and how do we define that? A lot of it is just from really good history taking and talking. You can start to tell when someone is pulling back from social engagements, when they're not acting like they used to. Why were they referred for this work in the first place? Or why did they self-refer? Because that's happened to me many times, where someone has had this feeling like they, in their logical brain, they believe that this obsession with food is totally valid and it's a good thing. but there's something in their body that says, this isn't right. There's something happening here, and they won't be able to explain it, but they'll self-refer. So we can do a lot through just talking with people. You know, where is this coming from? How did it start? Again, I think asking that question, what does caring about food bring into your life? And what does caring about food to this extent take from your life? And being able to do a really good inventory of that. The other thing I'm really assessing for three different things over and over and over again. And the first is motivation. There is a very different vibe and a very different feeling when you're working with someone who's just interested in something and someone who is acting out of fear and anxiety and compulsion, and trying to get them to explain why they have to make their own bread, why they spend hours a day researching the ingredients in plant milks. You know, when you start to get into that and you start to get a feeling for the motivation, it becomes quite clear what's happening. And one of the first things to go when motivation is about fear and anxiety and compulsion is flexibility. So the second thing I'm looking for is, how flexible are they? You can care about food. You can have values around food. But are you able to go away with girlfriends for a weekend? Are you able to go for an impromptu dinner date somewhere? Are you able to camp? Are you able to go to a friend's house and just eat what they have there? And there's going to be different thresholds for these kinds of behaviors for different people, depending on health conditions and what they have going on. But a certain level of flexibility is what allows for us to live our lives with other people in them. And when people become too rigid, what we see is that their lives become very small. They are able to do less and less. And the things that they do continue to do, they either have to bring all of their food with them, or they don't eat. And when this starts to happen, there tends to be lots of thoughts and feelings from family members and friends about what's happening with this person, right? There starts to become definitive feedback from their social network if they're willing to be open about that. So motivation is a big thing. You know, are you doing this just because you want to feel a bit more energetic and you want to add more nutrient-dense foods to your diet, and you want to, you know, you want your digestion to feel good, and you want to prevent, you know, there's a certain abundance feeling that is associated with that motivation versus, I can't eat this. These foods are toxic. None of this is good. If I eat this, I'm going to get sick and die. Like, there's like a very fear, anxiety, compulsion feeling to this other motivation that people will have. So motivation, second thing, flexibility. Third thing, sorry, I'm just having a sip of tea. Third thing, is it pleasure driven? And this can be a funny one as well. Like, you need to have some experience, because there are certain things that I know I do for my health that just isn't 100% pleasurable all the time. Like, I'm making a salad for dinner tonight and I'm kind of like, ugh, like, I'm going to finish recording podcasts. I've got a couple more I want to do. And then I'm going to have to go downstairs and get the vegetables out of the fridge and wash the lettuce and do all the chopping and blah, 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 blah. Is every moment of that pleasurable? Some days it is. Right now it's 4 p.m. and I'm finishing up a work day and it doesn't feel that pleasurable at the moment. But overall, I actually know I'm going to feel so much better tonight and tomorrow, and, you know, for getting the foods into me that I know treat my body really well for the most part over the course of a week. So overall, it is pleasure driven because I enjoy eating salads. They taste really good. It's going to feel really good to put that in front of my family for dinner tonight. I'll feel good at dance class after for having eaten it. I'll feel better in the morning because I'll have eaten some salad, some greens. I just haven't had any vegetables at all today. So overall, it's really pleasure driven. And again, if I got you know, if something happened with my family and I had to just get out the door really quickly and we had to abandon our dinner plans and I had to make do and eat something else, I could totally do that too. Because what would be most pleasurable in that circumstance would be just whatever was easy because we had to get out the door. Now that's really different from if your motivation, right, is from a place of fear and anxiety and compulsion, because there's not a lot of pleasure left in it. It's a requirement. It's something you have to do. It's a must do. It often becomes a chore. And the only pleasure that is ever gotten out of most of these things is just relief from the anxiety. Relief from the obsession is the only inherent pleasure. Food can become so restrictive in what's healthy and what's not healthy in this circumstance that there's nothing left that even tastes good. This is like you get into these really bizarre situations where the person's making brownies out of protein powder and water or something weird like that, and then they're microwaving it, and you're like, this isn't even healthy, and it's certainly not pleasure driven. But it can be tricky because people will convince themselves that easing the anxiety, that giving in to the obsession, that easing all of that is pleasurable. And that to a certain extent, it's easier just to eat the foods that are on the safe list than having to confront all of the discomfort in their mind around control and weight, that eating the weird food that doesn't taste very good sometimes on some level is pleasurable because they just don't have to deal with all the discomfort of letting go of control, of easing up. So it's a tricky one, but again, you know, it's interesting that even 20 years later, well, not quite 20 years, 17 years after this residency experience, that so much of the separating and the divide of the difference between just a moderate interest in healthy eating and orthorexia is about vibe, is about where on the spectrum someone lands. The words that they use, the energy that is about them, how they move through the world, how they do other things when you're working with them. You get insight into the way that they operate and the way that they live. And there's a whole lot of the diagnosis of it that really depends on someone being willing to be open and honest about what's really pleasurable in their lives and what's really adding to their lives and what's actually isolating them and restricting them and keeping them separate from other human beings and from life experiences. So not an easy answer, but I think what it really comes down to is this idea that when we care about food from a healthy perspective, a genuinely healthy perspective, we have the right motivation, we remain flexible, the things that we do, the efforts that we make are inherently pleasurable, and they add to our lives. They make our lives richer and more fun and more balanced, and they help us build esteem. When it's coming from this orthorexic place, where the motivation is all about control and there's rigidity and the pleasure's gone and it's been replaced by requisites, things that are forced and have to happen if you don't want to live in perpetual anxiety, we see that this interest in food has crossed a line and it's become something that's detracting from our lives. It's isolating. It's keeping you from just enjoying things with friends and enjoying life, which is kind of the whole purpose of health to begin with, right? So just something to think about. I released an episode with Gab Gallant, and if you haven't listened to that, you can go listen to it because she talks a little bit about her spiraling into orthorexia. And it's really interesting to hear her talk about it and how much work it was to come out of it. Something that felt like it was motivated by just an interest in being well. And I think that for everyone else listening, I hope that it also brings up this idea or this thought process or this conversation, I think is what I'm trying to say, around idealizing our food, optimizing, the constant conversation around it. And is that actually healthy? What are we promoting when we're constantly calling foods clean or dirty, good or bad, healthy, unhealthy, junk? When we use words like that, like, what is the conversation we're encouraging? And is there a way to be less binary in the conversation around food so that those who are susceptible to falling into these places aren't helped along the way? They aren't aided into orthorexia by the current conversation. So just thinking about that as you consume social media for the next week, just looking at what you're consuming, who are you following? What's their messaging? Is it coming from a place of abundance or is there a lot of fear in it? Does it pull up feelings of fear in your own body? Okay, I'm going to leave it at that for now. Come on over to Instagram at Food Freedom Body Love and let me know what your thoughts are. All right, that's it for me today. And don't forget, if you are interested in finding your best healthy-ish life, if you are interested in getting a 10 plus page healthy-ish blueprint that is specifically and uniquely designed for you by me, if you want to go even further beyond that and have some coaching and accountability and a team of experts in the health and healthy-ish wellness field, handpicked by me, vetted by me, and approved by you, then I want you to go to the link in the show notes called Work With Me and find out all the juicy details about both my a la carte and deep dive, healthy-ish life one-on-one deep dive programs. Life-changing, health-changing, whether you were managing difficult health conditions like diabetes or high blood pressure, or you are dealing with a long laundry list of subtle health conditions that no one will take seriously, I'm your gal. I'm here for you, and I want to help you feel vibrant and incredible and amazing in your body without giving up on any of the adventure or croissants that life has to offer.